Jesus said, I came to bring fire to the earth, and how I wish it were already kindled. Do you think that I have come to bring peace to the earth? This falls squarely into the category of things that Jesus said that you wish he hadn't said, especially if you were the preacher. In all four Gospels, Jesus is presented as a man who chose his words very carefully. I do not think he regretted even these hard words. These words do, however, seem out of character with the Jesus of green pastures, lost sheep, and the good shepherd that we hold so dear. Particularly in Luke's Gospel, Jesus is presented as a man all about peace. The gospel opens with the proclamation that Jesus will guide our feet in the way of peace, and closes with Jesus offering his followers a benediction of peace. In between, he tells the parable of reconciliation between father and son. Jesus blesses the sick with peace, teaches his followers to bring greetings of peace as they travel the countryside sharing the good news. So where do these words of scorching fire and division come from? Remembering the context is very helpful here. I know thinking about Holy Week seems an odd thing to do in mid-August, but that is right where the lessons from this reading from the readings this summer have been pointing. Luke's gospel right now is all about preparing for Jerusalem. Earlier this summer, our gospel lesson was the story of Jesus' decision to set his face to go to Jerusalem. Jesus made a conscious decision to head toward trouble. Now, punctuation is something that rarely rises to the level of enough importance to merit mention in a sermon. But did you know that exclamation points are not all that common in the Bible? There are four in our gospel lesson today. Jesus was aware that his days were numbered, and he had a sense of urgency about conveying his message. Jesus said, I have a baptism with which to be baptized, and what stress I am under until it is completed. Exclamation point. The stress of which Jesus speaks is not distress or anxiety. Jesus was totally consumed as if he was on fire with the mission he was sent by God to accomplish. Jesus did not come among us to affirm our understanding of God or to validate human religious institutions. Jesus came to usher in the kingdom of God, to show us God's will for creation and God's desire for our relationships with God and with each other. Jesus came to a broken political religious system. The people yearned for reform. Those most in need of God's love and mercy were pushed to the farthest margins of society. The peace of Jesus' day favored those who held positions of power at the expense of the powerless and the expendable. So Jesus spoke of destroying that peace. He spoke of fire, of the need to make the decision to follow him toward right relationship with God. Traditions, ways of being, are passed from one generation to the next generation. I am a Christian primarily because my parents and grandparents were and are Christians. My uncle and my cousin are both clergy. Some things just seem to run in families. Jesus knew that he needed to change the very fabric of his society. He understood that the decision to follow him would turn parent against child. His radical message of love and forgiveness drove a generational wedge children could not follow in their parents' footsteps if they wanted to reach Jesus' vision for the kingdom of God. When I do premarital counseling, I ask couples to prepare genograms for their families of origin. A genogram is essentially a family tree with additional information. Lines are drawn on the diagram to indicate whether a relationship is good or troubled or estranged. I tell couples to get the family dirt, to find out where the skeletons are buried and where the dirty laundry is hidden. I also ask them to annotate those aspects of their family that they want to celebrate. I do this exercise with couples mostly to get them telling stories, but also to look for generational patterns. Several years ago now, as a couple and I worked through their genograms, we noticed that in the Grimm's family, there were alcoholics in every family, in every generation, on both sides of his family. Going back three generations on the bride's family, we noticed that there was only one intact marriage. Every other marriage had ended in divorce. There were siblings who no longer talked to each other and parents who were estranged from their children. So I asked the groom, well, what happens in your family when people get stressed and the going gets tough? Obviously, he replied, we pour a drink. How about your family? I asked the bride. Well, she said, it appears we turn our backs and run away. Then we talked about how knowing about our family patterns gives us power to make some choices. We can choose to embrace those aspects of our families that are life-giving. We can also choose not to fall into the destructive pattern of our families. Unless we make a conscious choice, generational patterns will repeat themselves in families, in churches, and even in societies. I believe that there is a difference between making peace and keeping the peace. Jesus came to make peace, to bring love and mercy of God to broken lives. Jesus came to offer reconciliation and wholeness to broken relationships. Sometimes making peace is only achieved through the fire of truth-telling and conflict. Making peace leads us towards joy and whole relationships. Keeping peace, on the other hand, is about maintaining the status quo. You know, life is easier if you don't rock the boat. Keeping the peace takes us down a dead end, repeating destructive patterns. Jesus speaks with the urgency of a man on fire, imploring us to make a choice. Every day we make choices. Will we follow Jesus or merely keep the peace? What does Jesus have to say to a church pushed to the edge by infrastructure that is a burden? Do you participate in the change process or just keep your peace and wait this one out? Will our nation be able to make peace and engage in difficult conversations about racial and religious divisions? Or will we keep the peace and allow hate to continue to fester in our land? The hardest words of Jesus are often those that bear the most fruit in our lives. But isn't that true of all our relationships? In the midst of the fire and destruction that any life fully lived will eventually encounter, who do you want standing beside you? One who keeps the peace, or the one who makes peace and speaks the truth?